Okay, now we want to give additional examples of Metropolis implementations for systems, for different systems. So we will present today and the next lecture some examples of algorithms, or real algorithms, that are used to simulate gas systems, fluid systems. So we begin by discussing Metropolis simulations in the canonical ensemble, which is the simple case. So let's remind what we have to do. We only consider the configuration of partition functions, so there are no momenta, and so our probability distribution pi is simply 1 over z times the exponential of e to minus beta u, where u is the potential energy and z is the configuration of partition function. So we want to define a Metropolis update for this in this ensemble. As we discussed, the Metropolis algorithm works through a proposal and an acceptance. So let's define the proposal matrix. The configurations of the system are completely specified when we specify the positions of the particles. So the system is in a configuration X, which is specified by the positions of particle R1, Rn, and we must choose, with a given probability, a new configuration Y. So the procedure works as follows. We first choose one of the particles among the n particles, and this is easy to do using our random number generators. So we take a random number uniformly distributed in 0, 1, we multiply by n, so we get a random number in 0, n. We take the integer part of that, and this will give you an integer which belongs to the interval 0, n minus 1, and then we add 1, and we get a random number in 1, n. If you do a C implementation, then of course you would number your particle from z to n minus 1, and so you don't need to add this 1 here. So your particles would be r0, rn minus 1, and so you do not need to add 1 when you compute your index I. So you would simply take the integer part of n times the random number. Once you have chosen your random number, you propose a new position for the particle, and you choose the new position for your particle close to the position of the original position, and this is done in the following way. The algorithm depends on a parameter delta, which is fixed in the whole simulation, so it's decided at the beginning of the simulation and then it's kept fixed. So delta is a fixed number, is a fixed parameter of your algorithm, and then you choose three numbers, xi, yi, zi, which are the coordinates of the new point, and they are simply obtained by summing to the original position, rix, riy, riz, delta multiplied by a random number minus 0.5. Important observation, the random number should be different for the three coordinates, so you need three random numbers to update the position. And of course, delta multiplied by a random number minus 0.5 has the purpose of obtaining a random number distributed in the interval minus delta divided by 2 plus delta divided by 2. So essentially, if you look at the picture, the two-dimensional picture, we take a square around the original position, and we take a new point, a new position, uniformly distributed in the square of side delta around the original position. So this is what we do. We move the particles in the square. So this is our proposal. So the proposal is a configuration in which all particles apart from particle I are exactly in the same position, so we only move one particle, particle I, the particle we have chosen. And particle I is moved from position ri to position r prime I, where r prime I is obtained in a small square around the original position. You may imagine that there may be problems with at the boundaries, because if the original particle was very close to the boundaries, then you cannot go outside of the box. But for the moment, ignore the boundaries. We'll come back later and discuss how to deal with the boundaries in this problem. What is the probability density of this proposal? Well, we must choose one particle among n particles, and this, which means that the probability of choosing particle I is 1 over n. And then what is the probability density in this case, probability density of choosing one point in a cube of a size delta times delta times delta, delta in h direction, is of course 1 divided by delta cube, because we choose the new point uniformly. Note that the probability density is independent of the original configuration, and of course the probability of going from x to y is identical to the probability of going from y to x, because if the original point, if r prime I is in the square of size delta around ri, also the opposite is true. So you can go back to the original point with the same probability. So the proposal matrix in this algorithm is symmetric, and so the acceptance is the usual one that we already discussed, for instance, in the Ising case. So it's the minimum of one and the ratio of the two probability distributions, which tells us that it's the minimum of one, the exponential of minus beta, the energy difference. Note that the potential energy difference, you don't need to compute the full potential energy before and after in the case of two-body interactions. And indeed, you can rewrite the difference between the two potential energies simply as written here, so as the energy contributions which involve particle I. So the new energy is simply obtained by computing V, r prime I minus rj, where rj are the positions of all particles which are kept fixed in the simulation, in the move, so all j different from I, and this is the new energy, while the old energy, the contribution of the old energy is the same, but now you compute the sum of the potential of ri minus rj. Ri is the position of the old particle. So the work which is done to update one particle is of order n. You need to compute a sum over all particles, not of order n squared, as it would be if you had to compute the full potential energy. As we discussed, the algorithm depends on a parameter delta, and this is often the case in metropolis algorithms. There is always a parameter, is often a parameter in the proposal that is free. The algorithm is correct whatever delta is, but of course this parameter is crucial for the efficiency. So the idea is to choose delta so as to obtain the smallest error for a given number of iterations. You want to optimize delta in such a way to obtain the smallest error. So for fluid system, what is the typical dependence of the error on delta? So here there are two typical graphs. One corresponds to low density systems, so for gases, and the other for a liquid. So the typical behavior in both cases is the one which is drawn here. So the error decreases as delta increases. This is easy to understand. If delta is very small, of course the system moves very little, and so it takes many steps to obtain an independent, a new a new configuration. So delta too small is never a good idea. Then, of course, you try to increase delta. For gas systems, after a while, the autocorrelation functions, the errors, are independent of delta. So there is no improvement in increase in delta. While for liquid systems, for dense systems, after a while the error begins to increase again, because if you move the system too much, then you, in a certain sense, imagine that you have one particle, you move a lot, then there is a high chance that this particle will go on top of one of the particles that are near, and in this case the move will be rejected. Imagine a dense system, so particles should be not too close one to the other, so there is not much space to move them, and so if you increase delta too much, the error will start increasing again, and in this case there is an optimal value of delta. For gas systems, there is not a real optimal delta, and in this case one usually chooses the smallest possible delta, consistent with having a reasonably small error, because a small delta from computation, from an implementation of the algorithms, usually allows you to use an improved method for the computation of the potential energy. So for gas systems, you have indeed an interval of optimal delta, and you usually try to choose the smallest delta which belongs to the interval in which the error is essentially constant. For dense systems, there is a clearly defined optimal delta. How do you choose delta? Well, in principle, you should compute the error, so you should do many simulations, compute the autocorrelation times, and verify which is the optimal delta, which is not convenient and it requires a lot of work. So there is a rule of thumb, a practical rule, which in most of the cases gives you a reasonable result, not really the optimal number, but something which is close to it, and is the following. It implies that you compute the acceptance of the move, so you compute the number of accepted moves divided by the total number of attempted moves. This is called the acceptance of your Metropolis algorithm, and in many cases you choose delta so that the acceptance is a number which is between 30% and 50%. This rule of thumb usually provides you typical value of delta which are in the middle, which are very close to the optimal ones. And the reason is the following. If delta is very small, in this case F is very large. If you move the system very little, of course you will have a very high acceptance, but if you have a very high acceptance, this means that you are not moving enough and you expect the error to be large. So very large acceptances are indications that the system is not moving. The system is not moving, and so in this case, you expect the system to have large errors, in the sense that it takes a lot of time to obtain an autocorrelation and to obtain uncorrelated data. Then imagine that you increase delta a lot. For instance, in the dense system case, if you increase delta a lot, then the acceptance will become very low, because there is not much space for your particles to move in, and then you move the particles and the move will not be accepted. So for a dense system, the acceptance will decrease very fast as delta increases, and after a while you won't accept anything. So you will propose hundreds of moves and only one of them will be accepted. In that move, the system will move a lot, but only once every 100 iterations. So again, you expect the error to be large. So an acceptance of 30%, 50% means that the system accepts significant amount of moves, one every two, one every three proposed moves, but not too many, so it means that at least the system is moving sufficiently fast. So this is the rule of thumb, so you take acceptances of the order of 50%. Then there is a second question, which is relevant in implementations, and in the question of sequential versus random updates. So the algorithm that we have discussed is an algorithm in which there is a random choice of the particle, which is called a random update. And indeed, the implementation was the following. We choose one particle, we propose a movement of that particle, and then we accept and reject the move. In most of the applications, one uses what's called sequential updates. So for instance, this is typical sequential updates. We have particles that are numbered from 1 to n. And so what we do the following. We propose a movement for particle 1, and then we accept, reject the move. Then we go to particle number 2, accept, reject the move. Then we try to move particle number 3, particle number 4, particle number 5. So here the update is sequential. So we update the particle sequentially. So this is the main difference. So there is a basic theorem, which is not totally obvious. I won't prove it, although it's not that difficult, but not obvious, that the sequential update is again a valid algorithm, but is a valid algorithm that does not satisfy the detailed balance condition. But it satisfies the stationarity condition. So it's an algorithm that satisfies the stationarity condition. So again, it's a good algorithm, but it does not satisfy detailed balance. Of course, for Monte Carlo purposes, an algorithm that satisfies the stationarity condition is a correct algorithm. So you can use the sequential update as well as the random update. There is only one caveat in this, for sequential updates, that sequential updates may have problems with ergodicity, with system that has discrete degrees of freedom. This is the case for spin systems. So if you have a gas system, a fluid system, you don't care, and you never have ergodicity problems in the systems that the variables are continuous numbers, are real numbers. But in spin systems that have discrete degrees of freedom, there may be problems with ergodicity. And so sometimes one uses random and sequential updates together. So one mixes random and sequential updates. There is a question of efficiency, of course. We are changing the algorithm, so we may ask the question, which of the two algorithms is more efficient? For systems like gases or fluids, in which the relative positions of the particle changes in the simulation, so particle 1 may be close to particle 2 at the beginning of the simulation, but after 200 iterations, they just move apart. So particle 1 is in one part of the system, and particle 2 is in a different part of the system. The two methods, from the point of view of the efficiency, are completely equivalent. There is really no difference. Errors are exactly the same. The sequential update is only slightly faster because you need one random number less. So there is the need of, you don't need to generate an additional random number, and random number generations is usually, it may be heavy from the computational point of view. So in this case, you have an algorithm which is slightly, but really slightly faster, not very much. So you don't really see a difference between random updates and sequential updates for this type of system, for fluid systems. For spin systems, there is a difference if you sequentially update neighboring spins. So if you order the spin on the lat in such a way that spin 1 is close to spin 2 is close to spin 3 is close to spin 4, and you update them sequentially, in this case, the error increases when you introduce the random updates. So sequential updates are faster, are better from the point of view of the error than random updates. So you should prefer them. Of course, they are also faster for the same reason we discussed before. You need one random number less, but you should be aware of the ergodicity problems. So in many cases, a good idea to do a certain number of sequential updates, maybe 10, 20 sequential updates, and then maybe you introduce one random update to be sure that there are no ergodicity problems. But in spin system, there is usually usually some advantage, maybe a factor of two in the errors, in using sequential updates with respect to random updates.